First down and goal to go at the 6. 3:42 to go. First quarter, no score. Mahomes, Pacheco. They fake a jet action. Mahomes wants to throw the ball. Slings it wide open right side. Kadarius Toney walks the tightrope and is hopping into the end zone. Touchdown! Kansas City. Is it football or gymnastics? Kadarius Toney lands it for a gold medal and his first National Football League touchdown.
Kadarius Toney making his impact yesterday as the Chiefs are able to knock off the Jacksonville Jaguars 27-17, a workmanlike effort. We'll break down that game, and I'll explain once again how Doug Peterson is no different than any other coach in the National Football League. Some people want to make him out like he's a genius. He won a Super Bowl. That's pretty cool. He had a Philly special. That was a gutsy call.
He's going to live off that forever.
He will, and he should. I mean, you know, a lot of guys never won a Super Bowl.
The reputation.
Yeah. I'll tell you what coaches continuously do in the National Football League, and I'm so happy they are not smart enough to figure out. I am absolutely astounded and blown away by how coaches continuously in the National Football League get paid millions of dollars to not have conviction. I hear these coaches, I'm going to do it my way. If I'm going to get fired, I'm going to do it my way. No, a lot of them don't. And I'll give you another example of Doug Peterson yesterday and how he had an opportunity to beat the Chiefs yesterday. I know the Chiefs led the entire way. I know the Chiefs won by 10. Doug Peterson and Jaguars had the Chiefs on the ropes early in that game, and Doug Peterson completely let them off the hook. I'll explain that coming up. I'm happy. I'm a Chiefs fan. I'm happy that coaches and teams continuously do this. Someday there's going to be a coach and a team that's actually going to do it right, and they're going to pull off a stunner by doing it the way they need to do it. And I'll explain how you do that. All right? It's coming up. Don't go away on that. Local sports, Dusty. Football, yes. Playoffs, a lot of teams going by the wayside on Friday.
Yeah, unfortunately, Beloit was one of those. They lost to Kingman 35-6 on Friday night. Good news from the game was Logan Arrowsmith did get over 2,000 yards rushing, but as talking with Coach Gober at the end of the game, he much would have rather had the win.
Well, sure.
Against Kingman, but still a great feat there for Logan. That was the highlight of the night. Nolan Friend threw and ran all over Beloit, and their defense is just outstanding there at Kingman, and we knew that going in. So Beloit still a great season. They had an 8-game winning streak there after losing their first two and finished at 8-3 this year. So still a solid year for the fourth year in a row in the quarterfinals there for the Beloit Trojans, losing 35-6 Friday night.
Logan will be the first to tell you, and I knew that anytime you talk about statistical numbers like that, 1,000 yards in a season in NFL as a running back, 2,000 yards in a season for a high school running back, quarterback throws for 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 yards, whatever it may be, they can't do it by themselves. Mm-hmm. Logan Arrowsmith had a terrific offensive line to run through and use, and they opened holes for him. And he also made some tremendous runs with his speed in his power and his burst. And there's times he broke tackles and got yards after contact. There are times where he had a huge hole to run through because of his offensive line. So, you know, when Logan gets all that recognition for 2,000 yards rushing, which is an amazing accomplishment, and it is fantastic, and he deserves all the credit in the world, he'll be the first to tell you, my offensive line allowed me to get 2,000 yards. And so the offensive line, the big guys, the hogs in the trenches, they like to say back in the day, those guys don't get enough credit. They just get thrown in as they're a group of guys. Well, without that group of guys, Logan Arrowsmith doesn't run for 2,000 yards this year.
Absolutely not. So, yeah, congratulations to that group as well for helping lead that 2,000-yard rushing season for Logan. So, again, Beloit falls to Kingman. Kingman moves on. They'll play Southeast Saline coming up this Friday night. Southeast won over Hoisington, so that game will be in the sub-state matchup. The semifinals, the 2A playoff Southeast, is actually at Kingman coming up on Friday. Also, Osborne ended up with a loss to Axel 52-6, so Osborne's season came to a close there Friday night on Z96.3 The Lake. Smith Center saw their season come to a close as well, a 28-6 loss at Inman, and Thunder Ridge is still alive in the playoffs. They picked up a win there on Friday night over Victoria, 62-46 in Victoria, and Thunder Ridge will be hosting Dighton coming up on Friday in Substates. So that's a look at football. You can find the full brackets for everything online at ncksports.com for high school football playoffs here in North Central Kansas.
I'm gonna bet on Andale.
It's a safe bet.
Dear Lord, you see what they did to Rock Creek? Rock Creek's a good team.
Yeah.
I mean, 7 interceptions and beat them to a pulp.
Yeah. And Clay Center's on an outstanding run right now in the playoffs, and that's who they get now.
It's going. Clay Center's terrific run is going to end.
It will end on Friday night.
Yes. It looks like it'll be Holton and Andale. They're on a collision course.
Yeah.
As people predicted for the year.
It's going to be interesting to see how even that one comes out, because Andale probably beat them by.
Maybe.
I could
see that game being a good game for maybe a half, and then Andale pull away. Kind of like what Southeast did. Southeast talking about them are three quarters last year.
Yeah, so that'll be fun to see how it all plays out. Again, ncksports.com for all the brackets.
Won't be fun for the opposition.
No, it won't be.
Against Andale.
Yeah.
Andale's like, yeah, this will be a lot of fun. Yeah, sure. You start to wonder a little bit, like, if you're winning every game by a ton of points and there's never any close games, does it become boring?
I think there's a part of it that does.
I agree.
I've talked to actually with a person from Bishop Miege when they were on that run where they just were not losing it at all in 4A. And this person actually told me, he's like, we straight up as fans do not enjoy the playoffs. Like, it's not fun.
It's not a challenge.
Like, you just go through, you roll through everybody. He's like, we enjoy the regular season when we're playing in the Eastern Kansas League schools that are 5 and 6A schools.
They'll play teams from Missouri or St. Louis.
And he's like, we love that part of the season. But at this time of the year, I mean, it gets annoying that the fans are always, like, complaining, for one. Mm-hmm. But it's also, like, we don't really enjoy it. It's not fun. I think Andale's probably the same way during the season and things like that. Now, if you get a good matchup, maybe that somebody actually challenges you for a little bit during a game like Southeast did last year, now that's probably interesting and fun to be a part of, and you, especially if you know you're probably going to pull away and win anyway.
Right. Right. I mean, I compare it to this. Like, when my oldest son was 8 or 9, it kind of was boring when I kept beating him on the basketball floor. I mean, it's kind of boring. So then to make it interesting, I gave him a 10-0 lead, you know, that type of thing. After a while, it gets a little bit boring. You got to spice up, do something different. So I suggest that Bishop Miege and Andale and others give the other team a 21-0 lead at the beginning and see what happens. And I would bet they'll still win by 21 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What were we going to say?
I was going to say, that those older video games, once you get the hang of it.
All right.
You're winning by 40 now. It's just not fun.
Yeah. Of course, you need to get off the rookie level.
Yeah. Right.
I could play Double Dribble on the Nintendo back in the day.
That.
And all I would do is just, like, try to get as many steals as possible and just see if I could reach, like, 200 points in a game.
Yeah.
And so that was my challenge. It wasn't winning, right?
Yeah, there's another challenge you put to
get to some kind of point total.
Yeah. All right, cool. Carry on.
So, again, high school football playoff brackets at ncksports.com. Also, the latest all-league volleyball team was released over the weekend, and that was the Mid-Continent League. Obviously, Smith Center is the regular season and tournament champions, had very good representation on the team. Senior Miley Raby, juniors Cameron Hutchinson and Gracie Kirkhoff were first-team selections, and junior Dakota Kattenberg second team. Tanley Rentschler, junior, was selected third team there for the Mid-Continent League all-league team. So look at the MCL Smith Center representatives. Rounding out that first team were Kenley Rogers of Hoxie and Heather Schimper and Taryn Sides of Phillipsburg. So that's a look at the all-league team in the MCL. You can find the full team, second, third, honorable mention. Everything's listed there at ncksports.com. So
at the Home Depot, you'll find
the fall sports season is starting to roll away here with football winding down, and today is the first day of winter sports practices for high school basketball and wrestling. So the girls and boys that are participating in both of those sports over the winter here are getting their first practices in today, and they'll start that preparation to get ready for the 2022-23 season. And competition will start there early December for most of those teams. So we'll have much more on that, obviously, once we get closer to competition and get things rolling there for the winter sports. So hard to believe that's already here, but it is here today for high school basketball and wrestling teams.
Who does Thunder Ridge have come up next?
Thunder Ridge has
Dighton.
Friday at home.
Dighton at home. Dighton knocked off Sylvan Lucas earlier. Thunder Ridge now, 62-46, was that the final against Victoria on Friday? Man, that was... Thunder Ridge has been in some high-scoring games over the last few years.
Yeah, they got a two-score lead right off the gate, right? So Victoria was fighting back. They were within like 4 and 6 all night, but could never overcome them at all. And then Thunder Ridge scored that last touchdown to get the two-score win.
All right. Anything else? I mean, add local sports-wise?
I think we got it covered.
Turn the page to basketball now, winter sports practices.
Give a little credit to Osborne in their game against Axtell.
Okay.
They got that 6-0 lead, and after one quarter, and they at least got to send some shivers to people, like, oh, whoa, what's going on there? Osborne had the lead after one quarter. That's nice. But, Axtell kind of showed why they're number one.
Unfortunately, there's four quarters.
That game, actually, I was talking to Todd because we were getting messages, obviously, before our game started. That game started a lot like the Hill City game did the other game they lost, right? Like, Hill City turned the ball over twice. Osborne scored. It was 8-0.
Yep.
Osborne was leading, and then all of a sudden it's...
Never scored again.
No, Osborne actually did score one more time that night because I think it ended up being like 62-14 or something.
They had the run of straight points is what Hill City had.
But, yeah, then it was the same type of deal against Axtell. Early turnover, early score, you get the lead, and then, this team's really good.
Yes, they are. And Canton Galva Axtell will be a heck of a game.
That's going to be outstanding.
That might very well be the state championship game in some cases.
I think some people would, and a lot of people actually would believe that.
Yeah.
Thunder Ridge Dighton winner's going to have a say in that, obviously, coming in a week and a half down in Newton, but we'll see what happens.
Absolutely. All right, so let's talk Chiefs football. Chiefs now the number one seed in the AFC. You know, they're going to finish fourth in the AFC West, according to some morons. And then they were going to, not have home field advantage at all in the playoffs, be on the road all the way through. Last year, Mahomes was broken. What is Josh Allen now? See, somebody give me an adjective for Josh Allen, because if you're going to sit here and say Mahomes is broken, Mahomes didn't do anything close to what Josh Allen's done the last 3 weeks. But anyway, I digress. Mahomes... Another big game yesterday. He was, where's my stats there? 26 of 35 for 331, four touchdowns, had an interception. Chiefs win over the Jaguars 27-17. So I want to talk first about Doug Peterson. So this just doesn't make any sense. So Andy Reid and the Chiefs decide for one of the few times ever they're going to take the ball when they win the toss. And the Jaguars, I've been wondering why teams don't do this more often, honestly, or try it. An onside kick somewhere during the game, whether it's the start of the game, whether it's when you're up 7-0, whether or not you kick a field goal and you're down 17-14, whatever it is, especially if the Chiefs' offense is humming. Like, why does it matter if the Chiefs start at the 25 or midfield? Like, take a shot, do an onside kick. The Chiefs have had a few issues with recovering onside kicks over the last few years, okay? So... I that's a brilliant call. Onside kick to start the game. Chiefs weren't even ready for it at all. And as special teams players, your first rule is to make sure the ball's kicked before you take off down the field. So that's a complete mental error on everybody on special teams. Dave Tobe could not have been happy. Brilliant call by Doug Peterson. So you get the football, and when you kicked an onside kick, you are taking a chance that you do not get it, correct? In fact, the chances of recovering onside kick are very, very low. I think it's like 4% or something like that. It's worse than it's ever been. So when you decide to kick the onside kick to start the game or any point in time during the game, you are acknowledging that I'm willing to risk letting the other team, in this case Mahomes and the Chiefs, have the ball at my 45. Because you kick off at the 35, it's got to go 10 yards. So if I kick it 10 yards, we don't recover it. I am taking a chance that if I don't get that kick yesterday to start the game, the Chiefs will have the football at my own, at my 45. So you think it's worth the risk, right? Apparently, because he tried the onside kick. It was worth the risk because they got the reward. They got the ball. Now help me out. So you're willing to give the ball to the Chiefs at your own 45 to start the game. But then you have, on the same drive after you get the ball, you have 4th and 9 at the Chiefs 39. And you punt?
Right.
Why in the hell do you punt? Like, what's the... Like, you're willing to give the Chiefs the ball at your 45, but you're scared when the Chiefs might get it at their 39? I mean, you apparently don't think you can kick a 56-yard field goal.
Yeah.
So that's out. You're going to punt and gain 19 yards in field position if you kick it in the end zone. I know you're thinking you're going to pin them back, but many times that doesn't work. And guess what? It didn't work this time either. Okay, so why are you not worried about giving the ball to Chiefs at your own 45, but you're suddenly worried about field position and punting like four plays later on fourth and nine. I know fourth and nine is not highly likely to get, but it's more likely to get that than get an onside kick.
Right.
There is
right.
no consistency with coaches. And when you go against the Kansas City Chiefs, here's a thought. And listen, I love it. I love these coaches get paid millions of dollars to be gutsy for one call and then get chicken bleep. And that's what they become. Like, dear Lord, if you are wanting to beat the Chiefs, you got to pull out all the stops, especially at Arrowhead. You pull out all the stops. If you've already kicked an onside kick and willing to give it to them at the 45, then why are you scared of going for it on fourth and nine at the Chiefs 39? Because if you get a DPI or a defensive hold, the drive stays alive. You don't even have to complete a pass, okay? And the Jags punt it. Okay, so that's one example, right? Well, down in distance, Wade, down in distance. Fourth and nine, not likely. Well, it wasn't likely to get the onside kick, but you try that anyway. But okay, fine. I'll listen to your argument. Fourth and nine, Wade, you punt the football. Okay. Second drive. Jaguars have the ball. 0-0. They get a fumble by Pacheco. They're lucky they're 0-0. Fourth and three at the Chiefs 45. Fourth and three at the Chiefs 45. You go for it, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Nope. Punt. Wasn't this the guy that ran Philly special in the Super Bowl? Fourth and three at the KC 45. Punt. Later in the game, second quarter, you're down 14-0. Fourth and one at your own 30. What do you have to lose?
You're three and six.
You're going nowhere. No. You have nothing to lose. Fourth and one at your own 30. You're already down 14-0. And you
punt.
What the hell are you doing? Like, I understand if he didn't kick the onside kick. See, this is what sets it all up.
Yeah.
If he just kicks the ball away deep, okay, to start the game. And then he's consistent. Fourth and nine, it's too far. I'm going to punt. Fourth and three, I don't want to give the Chiefs the ball at their own 45. Fourth and one, I'm too deep in my own territory, my own 30, and I'm down 14-0. I just don't want to let it snowball. I understand that. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. But when you start the game with an onside kick, you're telling your team you're all in. You're telling your team we're going to pull out all the stops. And then Trevor Lawrence is looking at the sideline on fourth and three, going, fourth and three, why is the punting unit coming out here? At the Chiefs 45, you're punting. Fourth and one at your own 30, Lawrence was staying on the field, and Doug Peterson pulled him off and punted. You set the tone, and you confused your team. You said, when you went for the onside kick, you said, we are all in to upset this team on the road. And then you completely threw your game plan in the trash and got chicken bleep. And coaches do this all the time against the Chiefs. They start out aggressive, they have this idea, and then all of a sudden, they get timid and they get scared. And then they go into conservative mode. And you are not going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs might lose because they beat themselves, but you're not going to beat the Chiefs by being conservative on offense. It's not going to happen. You have got to be aggressive. And when you have the ball fourth and nine at the Chiefs 39, you're not gaining a lot of field position. And if you're already, and you're also sending a message that we don't think we can stop the Chiefs with our defense by onside kicking to start the game. So now you suddenly think you're going to stop the Chiefs whether they get at their own five, at their own 20 on a touchback on fourth and nine. It just blows me away. It blows me away that these coaches get paid millions upon millions of dollars, and some have won the Super Bowl. And I'm not saying, listen, I'm not saying I'm a better coach than these guys. I'm not. I don't know all the intricacies. I would not be able to get an NFL team ready to go deal with the egos, the personalities, the delegation of all the staff. But I do know that if I'm the head coach and I tell my team we're kicking onside kick and we're going after these guys, I'm sure as heck not punting on fourth and nine, fourth and three, and fourth and one.
What's worse is...
And if I miss all three of them, so be it.
Right.
I at least am trying to win the game.
Yeah. And what's worse, probably all week it was like that. You know, from Tuesday's practice.
We're all in. We're going to pull off the upset.
You know, in practice when they came up on a fourth down, stay out there. We're going for it. And then you're right. The first opportunity they had to double down on that, they didn't.
And, that's exactly right.
Right. And like you said, if you tell your team Tuesday through Saturday, hey, you know, we've made some mistakes here, but I trust you guys. We're gonna play the perfect game. We're gonna punt them. We're gonna pin them deep a couple times with our special teams. We're gonna play solid defense, and they do it that way. That's fine.
Yeah.
Or we're gonna go for it, and we're gonna do this. We're gonna steal a possession with the onside kick. That's fine too. But you gotta do what you say. And you got to do it the whole game. That's how you get those things. That's how those things even out, or that's how you get the advantages. You can't kick the onside kick one time and get an advantage and then just give that advantage away.
Yes.
With punting it away.
Right.
Some other time. Yeah.
Right. Like to me, like anybody that gambles, when you go to the casino and you win your first bet, or even now, you're betting on sports legally in the state of Kansas. When you win your first bet, do you just go ahead and say, boom, I'm done? You win the first bet, you're like, no. I pushed my luck too far. I won my one bet. I'm done. What do you normally do? You bet again. It's house money.
Yeah.
You bet again. You immediately
I'm
go.
I've working on house money for
right.
like 2 months.
There you go. Like if you win your first bet and win $10 on FanDuel or DraftKings or whatever it is now legally in the state of Kansas, odds are you can't wait to place another bet because now you got house money. You don't go, well, you know, I got my $10. I could lose my $10. I'm just going to sit tight. That's what Doug Peterson did.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's one thing if the onside kick didn't work out and then he's like, okay, I go conservative mode. You got the onside kick. Dude, it might be your day, and now you don't roll the dice ever again. Like, he went in and placed a $10 bet at the casino and went and cashed out immediately.
Yeah.
You ain't going to win much when you do that. And that's what he did. That's my analogy. And I am just blown away by coaches that continuously do this. John Harbaugh did it in a game a few years back, and he was consistent for the first two drives.
Yeah.
And then he had fourth and four at his own 45, and he punted. And the Chiefs went right down the field and scored. Like, dude, you had him on the ropes. The Jaguars had the Chiefs on the ropes early in regards to they got the onside kick, and then they got a first down, and now they have 4th and 9 at the Chiefs 39. If they go for it and don't get it, the game probably doesn't, it's no different how it ends. But if they get it on 4th and 9 to start the game and go down and go up 7-0, 3-0, it changes the whole tenor and tone of the game. This is a chance for you as an underdog. You have nothing to lose, and you act like you do.
My thing about it is like, it's like you want to do this, but then you get scared of the wrong thing.
Right.
Like, yeah, the Chiefs defense has some playmakers,
sure.
Right? But would you rather, like, go beat the Chiefs defense or have to, like, give
defend
something
15.
Up and then defend Patrick Mahomes and then, like, not be aggressive, not get any points, and then you have to sit here and try to shut out Patrick Mahomes in that offense?
Right.
Like, I think you get scared at the wrong time of the wrong thing. And
yep.
Harbaugh's a definite great example
yep.
of that back when he did it.
Because mm-hmm.
the Chiefs defense at that point was not even as good as they are right now this year, you
no.
know? And so it's like, you're like, what are you worried about here? Like, you want to win the game, right? Like, that's the goal. Like,
yeah.
Herm Edwards is all you can tell you.
You
play
to win
the
game,
right? And so there's so many teams that just act like they're going to do that, and then they don't. And it's refreshing to be on the other side of it, because how many times would we be watching the Chiefs playing Peyton Manning and the Broncos, and they're kicking field goals
mm-hmm.
on 4th and short, and you're like, you got to get 6 against this team.
Right.
You can miss this. You can miss this 4th down conversion.
Right.
It's not going to hurt you any more than it's going to hurt you by just kicking for 3 and then moving forward and getting beat by touchdowns against field goals every single time out. It got so frustrating.
Oh, I know.
And it's like, you got to understand who you're going up against and what the situation is. So a game against a team like the... Those are the Giants and Daniel Jones, right? Like, I know they've got a good record, but you can beat that team
right.
playing good defense and getting field goals and a touchdown
right.
here or there, right?
Mm-hmm. right?
You don't have to, like...
The Broncos.
Yeah, the Broncos. You don't have to, like, be like, oh, I got to be aggressive in this game on all no holds barred. I got to take every chance that
yeah.
I can. But against the Chiefs, you do. And if it's Alex Smith against Peyton Manning, you got to be aggressive at some point. And so there's coaches that act like they want to do it, and then they don't. Brandon Staley is another one, right? Like
He really did do it last year, and then stopped doing it.
And
then he got criticized,
yeah.
and then he started. He does it some this year, but not as much.
Yeah,
You're letting other people judge how you coach,
exactly.
and how you should just step away from the game if you don't do it based on your convictions. So, and the other thing is, you know, the Jaguars aren't going anywhere, so there was no reason to not play loose and try to pull up the upset. It's one thing if they're 6-3 and a playoff berth on the line. I get that. You might be a little bit more conservative, but I just it just cracks me up all the time. And here's the thing. The flip side of what you just said, you know, you talked about how the Chiefs used to, you know, kick field goals instead of going for it, and they settle for field goals. And well, they had Alex Smith. Do you notice what the Chiefs did yesterday? I mean, most teams 4th-and-2, what was that? The Jacksonville 45 or whatever it was? I don't remember what yard line it was. It was in the fourth quarter. Uh-huh. It was like 4 or 5 minutes to play in the game. Chiefs are up 10. Most teams would just punt it. Yeah. You're up two scores. And it's not 4th-and-1. It was 4th-and-2. And the Chiefs aren't running the ball, of course. And they throw it, and Kelce gets a first down rather easily. Andy Reid would have never done that with Alex Smith. There's no way he would have done that with Alex Smith. So Andy Reid's actually done the opposite of what Doug Peterson. Yeah. Doug Peterson should have been doing what Andy Reid did. And Andy's like, you know what? We're just going to finish it right here and be done with this thing. Yeah. I don't want any drama. We're going to be done with it. And Doug Peterson is like, all right, I'm all in. And he gets it comes up. He's smelling roses, getting the onside kick. And then he completely goes back into his hole. And it's just... It just blows me away.
Well, and Doug Peterson, of all people, should understand it, too.
Like, he coached under Andy Reid.
He knows what that other team's doing offensively.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally on every play, he should know a little bit about what might happen, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, everybody there.
Romo was
surprised. Talking about it on Friday. Bob Sutton is part of their defensive staff for the Jaguars. Like, everybody there knows Andy Reid and what his team is doing. And so, you've got to like, how do you not understand that going into the game? That you've got to be aggressive against this team.
Listen, I love it. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Like every
because
team.
I'm a Chiefs fan. But if I'm not a Chiefs fan and I'm cheering against the Chiefs, I'm going, why aren't these teams actually trying to go all in and win? And especially if you have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And it blows me away. It happens all the time. The Chiefs were -3 in a turnover category and still won easily.
Yeah, it was not a good game by the Chiefs yesterday.
They didn't play a great game.
At all.
Not at all. Not at all. Let's hear from Andy Reid, because the Chiefs did have 3 turnovers. They had some penalties. Here's Reid on cleaning up mistakes.
Guys, the coaches and the players, but we've got to get rid of some of that stuff, make sure we clean it up. You shoot yourself in the foot, it's going to come back and bite you. So we got to make sure that we take care of business there.
You know, the offensive line, I tell you, when they play well, Chiefs do fine. When they struggle, that's when the Chiefs have had problems this year, and they played pretty well yesterday. Mahomes on the O-line.
That's another great defensive line we faced today with first-round draft picks, guys that are big, fast, physical, and they did a great job running and pass protecting. So I think as the season goes on, offensive lines, especially with the rules in training camp, they get better and better, at least the really good ones do. And I think you see in our offensive line as the season goes on become that elite group that we all expected.
Now, yesterday, Mecole Hardman, he was out with an injury. Juju Smith-Schuster got knocked out of the game. More on that in a little bit. And Kadarius Toney got to come in. And I want to say, I was at least so far, I'm dead wrong, and I'm happy to be dead wrong. My feeling was when the Chiefs traded with Kadarius Toney, he's a guy that's going to maybe help him punt return. And he might make a few catches. It's going to take a while to catch on to the system. And he's going to really make an impact next year. And I actually love the trade, but I didn't think there's going to be a lot of impact this year. I was trying to warn Chiefs fans, listen, don't expect a lot from him. I mean, the Chiefs have brought in guys midseason that, you know, Josh Gordon, Le'Veon Bell, other guys, and they just don't catch on to the system. Boy, Kadarius Toney looked like he caught on the system really, really fast. And that leads me to go, why couldn't Josh Gordon do anything?
Yeah, like he's already better than the last guy that was wearing number 19 for this team.
Absolutely. Kadarius Toney yesterday. I forgot who it was. It was a couple weeks ago. No, it's Chris Collinsworth. Chris Collinsworth said, listen, if you want to give me anybody in the National Football League to run a route and get open, he said, I'm taking that guy, Kadarius Toney. And Mike Tirico was like, really? He goes, yes. He goes, I saw him in practice. I've seen him before. He goes, he is just so good at getting open, making these quick twitches, these twerks, if you want to call it that. And he did the same thing yesterday. And he was compared to Tyreek Hill when he was drafted. The Chiefs had kept an eye on him. They're interested in him at that time. And they trade what was essence was their extra third-round conditional pick, which is almost like a fourth. And they gave up a sixth-round pick, which is at the very end of the sixth, is like the start of the seventh. So it's not like the Chiefs gave up the top of a third round and a top of a sixth round to get him. And even if they did, it's not a horrible trade, at least right now. I know early stages. But they needed him yesterday because Hardman was hurt. Juju had to leave the game. Sky Moore's not really caught on. You know, Tony's further along than Sky Moore already.
Yeah.
Which is disturbing, I guess, because he was a second-round draft pick this year, but maybe he can still contribute. But here's Andy Reid on Kadarius Toney, who had 57 yards receiving, 4 catches, a touchdown. He had 32 yards rushing, and he's just he's only got so many plays that he's in there for until he learns more and more of the playbook.
He's a smart kid, and he does pick it up easy, although he's willing to spend time at it too. So he's not just getting the plays and then not studying. He spends the time at it. He's very talented. We're trying to give him some things that he's done before and then adding one or two things the last couple of weeks that he's not used to doing so he can continue to grow. But and then, you know, the quarterback has trust in him because of the feel he has.
And Mahomes was the one, of course, throwing the ball to Tony.
First off, he's a smart guy. I mean, he learned a lot fast, and we've been able to put him in positions, especially a lot more this week. But he's a smart guy, plays hard, and whenever he's got his opportunities, made plays happen. And this offense is, like I said all year, it's going to be everywhere, and I think you saw that again today. Guys stepped up and made plays happen, and that's the special part about this offense.
Kadarius Toney was never happy in New York with the Giants, and there certainly, I think, clearly he was probably able to play sometimes, and he didn't because he just, you know, he didn't buy into the systems. They had changed coaches after he was drafted. Daniel Jones was taking his lumps early as a quarterback, and there are a lot of people saying, well, Toney's always hurt, this and that. This is, why are we trading for the guy? Well, listen, that didn't worry me at all because, first of all, you put him with a good organization, you put him and you have him go to a team that's won a Super Bowl, and you have him play with a what's going to be a future Hall of Fame quarterback and a future Hall of Fame coach who's an offensive guru. I mean, Kadarius Toney had to be, like, absolutely opening up his Christmas gifts early when he heard he was traded to the Chiefs. And you can see how much fun he's having already. And one of the things that stood out to me is not the plays that Kadarius Toney made, but one that he didn't make. So I don't remember what quarter. It might have been third, fourth quarter. Mahomes put it right on him. He had to kind of slide, go a little low, and he dropped it. And Kadarius Toney immediately punched himself in the chest, slapped himself in the chest, showing everybody, that's my fault. Mm-hmm. He's like, that's my fault. He even went and put in, like, he should have got his hands up sooner. He took responsibility immediately. You know, he didn't just get up and, you know, pout a little bit. Or because that was kind of the feeling, is that Toney pouted in New York, wasn't happy, was a malcontent. I like that. That stood out to me. So Toney looked good, and it looks like the Chiefs have another weapon. Hardman may be back this upcoming week. Who the Chiefs have this week? I'm going blank.
Oh, it's right.
Chargers, Sunday
Chargers,
night.
Yes,
yeah, Sunday night. Chargers. Yeah. Chargers, Sunday night football. And then Juju Smith-Schuster was absolutely laid out, knocked out, cold in this game in the second quarter. And there are a lot of Chiefs fans are upset. The Chiefs themselves are very upset. Marquise Valdez-Scantling had some very, I thought, spot-on comments after the game. And basically what he was saying is, listen, if you're telling everybody you're going to protect the players, then why was that flag picked up? And I agree. I watched the Charger-Niner game last night, some of it, and Justin Herbert became a runner. So he gives up the protection of being a quarterback in the pocket. He ran. He did not give himself up. He did not slide. So he's lowering his shoulder and his head, right? And he gets drilled from the side by one defender, which changes where he goes, okay? Mm-hmm. The other defender's already, you know, gone into his tackling mode, which was Greenlaw, the linebacker. Greenlaw ends up hitting Herbert in the helmet with his helmet after Herbert was pinballed by the other defender. And I understand, they threw the flag, 15-yard penalty, unnecessary roughness. To me, that's the right call. I still don't know how a defender's supposed to do what Greenlaw's supposed to do, but whatever, I get it. Protect the players, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing that blew me away. It wasn't his second one. It was his first one. It's discretion of the officials. They ejected Greenlaw.
Yep.
They threw him out of the game for that hit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, in the Chiefs game, the hit on Juju was about as bad. And I'm not saying that Cisco, the safety, should have been thrown out. Actually, and I don't think Greenlaw should have been thrown out last night at all either. But I do think it's a 15-yard penalty. Whether it's the quarterback running the ball and not giving himself up, it's a defenseless wide receiver who cannot protect himself coming across the middle. That's what the NFL talks about. We're protecting our players and da-da-da-da-da. And they worried about all the concussion protocol. And the officiated crew yesterday, I think, is going to get docked by the National Football League for screwing up. Because that should have been a 15-yard penalty. And it doesn't change that Juju got knocked the bleep out. All it gets the Chiefs is 15 yards. But it does send a really weird message. Like, wait a minute. As receivers, I'm not going to be protected if I go over the middle and get lit up like a Christmas tree, because I thought that's what the rules were in place to do. If you take a shot to the head or neck area, especially if it's helmet to helmet, I thought that was supposed to be automatic 15, if not disqualified, as Greenlaw was for the Niners last night. And the Chiefs were not happy about it. Then Cisco laid another big hit on Scantling, which that one I thought was fair game. That was NFL shoulder to the back of Scantling, although he was defenseless. So once again, is it really the letter of the law? There's so much room for interpretation. That's the bad thing with a lot of rules in all these sports, and makes it tough on the officials. Here's Andy Reid on the Cisco hit on Juju Smith-Schuster. It knocked him out of the game, and I would imagine he's probably out for this week against the Chargers, but we shall see.
Well, as long as there's contact to the head, I mean, I doesn't need to be in the game. So it looked like there was contact to the head from where I was standing, but I'm not the one making that call. So, yeah, they said that he hit with his shoulder, and so that's why they picked it up. You hit somebody in the head, you're hitting in the head. But they said it was shoulder to shoulder is what they said. You know, he obviously was in pretty bad position there for hitting shoulder to shoulder. So
here's my thing. How in the world does an official say it's shoulder to shoulder when the guy is knocked the bleep out? A shoulder to shoulder shot doesn't knock you out.
Mm-hmm.
A shoulder to the helmet
right.
knocks you out. A helmet to helmet knocks you out. Whether it's a shoulder or the helmet by the defender hitting Juju, that's a 15-yard penalty. Here's Mahomes on the hit.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, man. Obviously, I don't think there was like any ill intent from the player. I mean, he's just trying to knock the ball loose and do stuff like that. Obviously, there was some helmet-to-helmet contact, and we want to get that out of the league as much as possible for player safety. So if we can review that and kind of make it to where there can be some type of penalty or something, obviously, you want to get that stuff out of the league as much as possible.
Okay, so this goes back to replay a little bit. In college football, you have targeting. You call targeting, you automatically review it to see if it's targeting. If college football can do that, why is this not a reviewable play? Why can't somebody buzz the official, say, whoa, 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 you picked up the flag, you say shoulder to shoulder, you're wrong. You're wrong. We already have somebody up in a booth in New York that's already watching this game that's in charge of replay. So you're wrong. We're going to buzz you. You're wrong. It was helmet to helmet. I'm sorry. You're wrong. We're going to buzz you. You should go ahead and either throw the flag even though you didn't, or you should go ahead and, you know, instill the flag, implement the penalty. But that's not reviewable. And it blows me away, replay. Like, I really like the concept of replay. But for instance, what game was it? It was the Bills-Vikings game yesterday, where the Bills player did not catch the ball. It was clear to everybody within one quick shot of a replay, and they did not stop play under 2 minutes. So the coaches are powerless. The coaches can't even challenge it. All right, if they go run out onto the field, they'll get a penalty for delay of game. They got, like, if it's under 2 minutes, I don't like long stoppages, but if you have any doubt that there's something wrong with the play in a close tight game like that was yesterday, mm-hmm. How is the people in the replay booth, how can they not see what we see at home on the first shot of a replay within 5 seconds? We know the ball hit the ground. How do you not stop play, review it, and get it right? That's the, what were they, out to the bathroom? Like, what is the point? If you are taking control of replay under 2 minutes and you do not allow the coaches to have any power to challenge anything, you better be on your best behavior, and you better be paying attention in New York with the replays, and you sure as hell better make sure that you stop play when you, and if you're not sure, that's what usually happens. There's a lot of times they're not sure, and the replay stuff that's clearly a catch, and you're like, why are we wasting time? I'm okay. I mean, I don't love that, but still, you're maybe saying, there might have been something there. This was clear in this game between the Bills and Vikings. And it was a huge play. Huge play in the game. And luckily for the Vikings, they came back and won. There was another one in a, I think it was a pro game recently, maybe it was a college game, where the ball clearly hit the ground and there was no review. And it's just, the point of replay is to get it right. That's what everybody tells me for years. Replay is great because you're supposed to get it right. Well, when you can get it right and then you refuse to review it, and you don't, coach can't do nothing because it's under 2 minutes, you start to wonder then, is the fix in? I ain't going to lie to you. You start to wonder. Like, that's so egregious and so easy to see with everybody's own two eyes. How do you possibly, Like, I understand the officials on the field missing it. Totally, I get that. But how do you, in a booth with all kinds of angles, how do you possibly not stop play to get it right? And I don't know why we can't review and show the officials got it wrong. I'm not going to criticize the officials. The NFL happens so fast that I understand if they think it's shoulder to shoulder initially. But when a guy is writhing in pain and his fingers are twitching like Tua's was, just like Juju's was yesterday, that's not a shoulder to shoulder hit. Anybody that knows real physics or any kind of physics should understand that does not cause a player to do that shoulder to shoulder. So that should have been their dead giveaway. But to protect the officials, that's where replay can jump in and buzz and say, listen, man, that was absolutely helmet to helmet. Stick with your penalty.
Yeah,
doesn't change Juju being knocked out. Doesn't change Juju being hurt and going to be out for maybe a game or two. But it does at least the players are confused now. The players are confused going, man, if that isn't the epitome of a 15-yard unnecessary roughness call to protect the players, then what are we doing here?
The interpretation of the play live by whoever said pick up the flag saw what he saw and saw actually what I saw was Cisco coming in with his shoulder low, turned toward Juju, right?
Right.
Juju is making a move upfield, and Juju actually initiated contact from what I saw, but it did end up head-to-head, right? Like, Cisco comes in low with the shoulder. He did come in with the shoulder. He did not lead with his head on this particular play. He came in with the shoulder, but by the time Juju had turned where he was at, then it's boom, helmet to helmet on the turn. And really, Juju's momentum was going more forward than Cisco was coming at him.
Right.
And I think that's where that interpretation live is of he came in to hit with the shoulder and they contacted shoulder to shoulder. I get it, because even on one of the replays, as I'm looking, I can see Cisco actually turning to get away from contact from Juju.
Right.
But in his turn, that also helped make it be a helmet-to-helmet hit. And so that's the part of the NFL rule that I don't like, is that the defensive player actually has no leeway there if you're going to call it the right way. I'm not saying they shouldn't have thrown the penalty flag, right? The helmet-to-helmet should be the 15-yarder like we saw in the Chargers-49ers game.
That's what I'm saying. There's no consistency.
And so that's what is weird about it, is like I don't like the call.
Yeah.
I don't like that that's a 15-yard penalty, because what's the defender supposed to do?
Right.
Because he's coming up to make a play, and Juju actually came into him, initiated most of the contact.
Well, and Juju's also ducking his head because he's trying to protect himself, and that's the whole point. Yeah. They say you're a defenseless receiver. You have to get into a posture where you can defend yourself. He never was allowed that because of the hit.
Yeah, and his duck was so it couldn't be quick enough because of how close Cisco was coming in to make the play.
Right.
So had he been actually able to get real low, he wouldn't have taken the head-to-head hit. But it's a rule that I don't like in the NFL for the defender.
Sure.
But I do for the fact that you want to keep everybody safe. I'm not saying I don't like that part of it, right? And I'm not saying this shouldn't have been a 15-yarder, but what I'm thinking is live, that's what the official saw, was he came in with the shoulder, and a lot of officials don't interpret that the right way. They don't understand that it doesn't matter if you came in with the shoulder. Mm. If your first contact is helmet to helmet, that's why I didn't like the no call on the MVS thing, is because Cisco, the same guy, literally vaulted into MVS and hit him under the helmet.
He led with his shoulder.
Hit him with his helmet. He led with his shoulder, but it was the same type of deal, right? Mm-hmm. There was helmet-to-helmet contact on the initial hit, and nothing was called on that one. And he actually vaulted himself that time. He wasn't even on the ground at that point.
Yeah.
And I think that's more of a defenseless receiver, is if you're trying to go up and make a turn, he's vaulting into you.
Well, I think they're both bad.
I think they both should have been 15-yard penalties.
When you're actually
vaulting, that's one of the things that they were focusing on one year, was if you're vaulting yourself and sending yourself into a defenseless receiver, you're going to get 15.
Right. And then the Greenlaw getting what he got, and he got disqualified.
Consistency is just not there. Yeah.
And once again, but and that's going to
be
how about the point
same
of replay
game, right? Exactly.
Shouldn't that be shouldn't that be reviewable?
Yeah, it should. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about the replay is supposed to help the officials. In this case, it could really help the officials, and get it right, because, like you just said, they should have been both penalties.
And they had already stopped with the Greenlaw one. They had already stopped the game because they did throw a flag.
Yeah,
and
discussed it for a long time.
Discussing it for a long time. So it's not like it stopped a hurry up offense or anything like that. No, it was. You're already there. Take a couple of extra seconds and talk about it and use New York. And I
I agree with Dusty, though. Yeah. I agree with Dusty is that defensive player, that's what I was saying with Greenlaw. Like, when all of a sudden the trajectory changes, when another guy hits the target you're going after, your target changes while you've already committed yourself. Same thing if Juju, you know, ducks his head, you know, the target changes for Cisco. You know, Scantling, you know, Cisco's already launching himself to try to knock him, and Scantling jumps higher than he anticipates and ends up. I mean, it is very tough for a defender. There's no doubt about it. But I will say, the rule is the rule.
It's the rule.
So right. Then if there's a shot to the head or neck area, whether it's with your shoulder or helmet to helmet, that should be a penalty. And it sure as heck is on the quarterbacks when they get touched.
And I know the defenders are taught, hey, we want that shoulder into the shoulder. The league, I think, is actually trying to get them, hey, let's go shoulder, try to get a shoulder down to the rib area. But that's not, I mean, that's hard to do on every single one. Like, you know, especially when you say, like, guys get bumped around and the target changes. But, you know,
Or you could just tackle like you're supposed to and wrap arms and actually not just launch yourself with a shoulder. I see this in college. I see it in high school. I see it in pro. It is horrible tackling.
Yeah.
When you just launch yourself and you don't even use your arms.
Right.
It's like you get your hands tied behind your back. I've seen Legarius Sneed do it before. I've seen corners do it a lot. Thornhill does it. And then these guys aren't guys that are going to like lower the boom. They're just flat out a little bit scared of taking a guy out. So they just throw their shoulder and dive at a guy. They don't even try to wrap up. And that's like, that is like totally the opposite of tackling 101.
Yeah, and defensive backs are the worst at it because I think part of that is the NFL rules of making a football move after a catch too, right? Like these guys are trying to catch it, but hey, I don't have to tackle him. All I have to do is dislodge this ball.
Yeah.
If I'm this close to him, I can just drill him. I don't have to tackle him. I can just knock this ball out.
And see, a lot of times I see they're going low. They're not trying to knock the ball out at all. They're just trying to chop him down.
Yeah.
I see that a ton.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking like the ones I see in college are usually like when Julius Brents got kicked out the other a week ago. It's like he's coming in toward the chest area.
Sure, trying to dislodge it.
Just trying to get that ball popped out of there so he can't make the catch. He's not even thinking about tackling, right?
Right.
And I think that's a lot of them that I see. And I think that I honestly think that's part of those rules where you know, you catch it, make a move.
Yeah.
Well, if he doesn't make a move, it's not a catch. I don't have to tackle him. I just got to get the ball out.
Yeah. Pacheco had the fumble inside the 10, and they went right back to him on the next drive. I love that. Yeah. And by the way, Pacheco with 35 snaps, 16 carries. McKinnon, 16 snaps. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was on the field for 4 plays. And 2 passes to him, one was not a good pass by Mahomes. The other, he was pressured. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire, what's the future hold for this guy?
Doesn't look good, does it?
No, it doesn't.
After what we've seen the last few weeks.
No, and Pacheco is getting, I think the key is the more experience Pacheco gets, the better he's going to have at vision and seeing the hole. And Lord knows he has the best burst of anybody and the power to go
and
with
it. And he's a better blocking back, too, to be completely honest with you.
Danny Allaire.
Than Clyde.
Yeah, McKinnon's our best blocking
back. Yeah, there's a couple plays yesterday I was like, that's a good pickup right there by Pacheco.
And I think that's why he's going to start playing more and more, is that was a concern, is he's got to figure out blitz pickup.
Yeah.
Now, on third down, he's out of the game anyway.
Yeah.
McKinnon's in there. Andrew Wiley got hurt as well, so now you're right tackle. You don't know what Wiley, with his arm and elbow, what this situation is. So the Chiefs did have a few injuries, no doubt, that took place yesterday that could impact them going in this game against the Chargers on Sunday, and the Chargers say, hold my beer, because the Chargers have tons more injuries than the Chiefs do. They're missing their top three wideouts. They're missing a couple defensive starters. I mean, the Chargers have a lot of injuries. The only other thing I want to mention about the Chiefs game yesterday is, should we be concerned with Harrison Butker? He missed another extra point.
Concern is probably a good word. I don't know if panic is concern could be a nice word there, because it hasn't looked great, you know, all season long. The extra point thing, you know, I guess if you're going to miss a couple, extra points are important, don't get me wrong, but you'd rather have those than the field goals. But but concern's probably a good word. I don't know how else to put it, but
I don't think this is a new thing this year. Obviously, he's missed extra points, and I'm on a group on Twitter. We talk about him missing extra points all the time, and it didn't start this year.
No,
right.
And so I still think that he just tries to kick the you know what out of the ball all the time, and that's hurting him on extra points because it's a shorter kick, and then he's not putting the right angle on it or what he's doing. I trust Harrison Butker. It's funny, you trust Harrison Butker on a 60-yard field goal more than you do on an extra point.
Right.
I So I'm not.
It's like a 3-point shooter that misses a layup or can't make a free throw.
I'm going to say right now it's annoying. Like I'm not concerned Harrison Butker's going to lose a game for us. Is what I'm going to say. I think that the Chiefs do enough to where one extra point's not going to lose a game.
Is it possible that we need to cut Butker a little bit of slack and that he's playing hurt and not fully recovered from his ankle?
I really think he's fully recovered. Yeah.
His kickoffs aren't the same. So maybe that's part of the issue, too.
And Harrison Butker at 75% is better than the two options we had without Harrison Butker. I know Matthew Wright made a 59-yard field goal.
Yeah, he missed a 40-yarder later. I totally agree with you. All right, looking around the NFL, the Chiefs are the number one seed. The Buccaneers win in Germany against the Seahawks. I said it when it happened, when the Rams blew it defensively against the Buccaneers, that's going to change around the Buccaneers season. That was the shot in the arm the Buccaneers needed. And now they're getting healthier, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Buccaneers end up being 11-6, something like that. They're going to win this division easily because it's a horrible division. The Buccaneers are 5-5, and everybody else has a losing record. Seahawks 6-4, but still lead NFC West. The Vikings beat the Bills. The Bills choked that one. Man. Yeah, just had to get the snap and just move forward, and the game's over, and they fumble it, recover in the end zone. And the Bills, to their credit, came back with a field goal tie, go overtime. Justin Jefferson with the best catch you'll maybe ever see in your life on a 4th and 18. Did you see that catch?
I did.
That was insane.
Yep.
I mean, they don't win the game without that catch. 4th and 18. Vikings are 8-1, and nobody's talking about them. And they won at Buffalo in cold weather, which they usually don't do. And the only loss the Vikings have is to
the Eagles.
Yes.
Yeah.
The only undefeated team.
Yeah.
The Bears blew a 20-point lead, but got totally the shaft on a horrible call by the officials in that game. 31-30, Lions beat the Bears. Justin Fields ran for 142 more yards as quarterback. He has almost 800 yards rushing already as a quarterback, and the Bears have played 10 games. He could end up rushing for like 1,500 yards as a quarterback.
Yeah.
The Chiefs beat the Jags. Chiefs are 7-2. Jags are 3-7. Dolphins win over the Browns 39-17. Tyreek Hill only had 44 yards receiving. Did have a touchdown. The Giants beat the Texans 24-16. Giants are 7-2. Steelers beat the Saints 20-10. Steelers got TJ Watt back. Broncos can't score. They lose at the Titans 17-10. Broncos 3-6. Titans 6-3. Jeff Saturday had never coached in the National Football League or in college. He was 2-7 in his final year as a high school football coach. And I predicted they'd beat the Raiders, and they did. 25-20. And the first thing Jeff Saturday did was put Matt Ryan back in at quarterback, which is what he should do, because I couldn't understand Frank Reich. Like, I understood benching Ryan for a week or something and putting Ellinger in, but I didn't understand, okay, Ellinger's our quarterback the rest of the year. Like, dude, yeah. Ellinger hasn't done nothing.
I don't know why you would go with Sam Ellinger, because
that helped get him fired.
This thing is not completely out of
reach. They're not. They're 4-5-1, and Taylor's been hurt. They got their running back back. I mean, this is a team that can definitely make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jeff Saturday, everybody's talking about how crazy it is. You know, Bill Cowher's going nuts about the worst thing he's ever seen, no experience, it's embarrassing their profession. You know what, Bill Cowher? You never had any broadcasting experience, but you accepted your job at CBS.
Yeah. There is Joe Thomas said it was the most egregious thing he's seen in the NFL, and I'm like, your team that you just played for traded their life for Deshaun Watson. This is more egregious than trading for a guy that has all these cases against him, all these people that are coming against him for sexual assault. Like, are you serious, dude? Like, he went on it was not like a rant, like a Stephen A. Smith rant, right? It was thought out. Like, he said what he wanted to say, but it was like, I don't know if I'd call it the most egregious thing that's ever happened in the NFL. Let's just take a step back.
Yeah, know? That's what people tend to
and
do.
I'm just like, yeah, you know what? It's it's his team. Let him do what he wants with it. Jim Irsay's got the say in this. It's
that's
his
right.
team.
That's
it's
right.
an interim situation. He doesn't have to go through all the Rooney Rule stuff trying to find a coach in the middle of the year just to finish it out. This is not his actual head coach right now for certain. I think he wants it to be if it works out.
Sure.
But it's just like, let's just take a step back just for a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
Why are we? But I'm not in the NFL circles. I didn't play like Joe Thomas. I didn't coach like Bill Cowher.
Yeah.
But I'm like, let's relax.
Bill Cowher hadn't broadcasted it before we did.
Yeah, exactly. We don't like come on here and complain about that all the time, do
yeah.
we? Professional athletes that just get a step into a high-profile broadcasting position.
With no experience.
You and I and Jason, we paid our dues in this business, and this guy's just going, this is the most egregious thing in the world that Joe Thomas got this job.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, when Bill Cowher said that, I was like, that's kind of hypocritical looking at what job you took, and you had no experience.
Yeah.
They're like, he's an analyst. No, he's not. He does interviews, pregame, all this. I mean, he is not a color commentator during a football game. I'm okay with athletes being a color commentator, okay, because they should know the game, the X's and O's. I'm all cool with that. But Bill Cowher, he's not an analyst. They like to act like he's not an analyst. He's one of the five cronies that's up on a set for a pre and a post and a halftime show, and then he ends up doing interviews with people like he's a journalist. That's taking the job of people that are way better than Bill Cowher is at doing that. But he's, yeah. I mean, step back for a second. Look how hypocritical that appears, Mr. Cowher.
I'm glad he got his first win, though, against the Raiders.
Me
That's
too.
Fun.
Raiders are 2-7. Josh McDaniels may be done after 1 year, and Nathaniel Hackett should be done after 1 year in Denver. That is a train wreck. Packers beat the Cowboys 31-28. How about this one? First time in the 62-year history of Dallas Cowboy football, the Cowboys led by 14 or more going in the fourth quarter and lost. They were 195-0. Packers came back and won, and the Packers may have saved their season. They're 4-6, and if they go 10-7, they'll be in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So they might have saved their season. The Cardinals beat the Rams. Rams are a mess. They're 3-6, and Cooper Kupp got hurt, and that's the only offensive threat they have. You think OBJ is going to go to the Rams when they're that bad? I would highly doubt it. He wants to win a ring. He's going to go to the Bills, the Chiefs, the Cowboys. The Cowboys would be a good fit for him, probably. I don't know if the Chiefs – I don't think the Chiefs need him, but that's just me. And the 49ers beat the Chargers last night 22-16. So the Chargers are now two games behind the Chiefs, actually three, because the Chiefs beat them head-to-head. And the Chiefs pretty much can – honestly, it sounds crazy because I know things can go nuts. But if the Chiefs beat the Chargers Sunday night football – this Sunday, the Chiefs would be 8-2, the Chargers 5-5, and the Chiefs would have swept the Chargers. The Broncos are 3-6, and the Raiders 2-7. You could basically say the division is over Sunday night.
It's a big uphill climb to recover from two losses to the Chiefs and try to win the division.
Remember how unbelievably tough this division is. The Chiefs aren't even going to win it. Let me tell you something. The Chiefs not only are not going to win their division, they're not even going to finish second. Yeah. How you looking now, idiots? Listen, we know our team better than any of the national talking heads. We said it before the season, the Chiefs would be just as good as last year, if not better, because they'd be a more complete team with a better defense. They went younger on defense, addition by subtraction, getting rid of Sorensen and Neiman, and honestly, Tyrann Mathieu, too. All right, we said it on this show. As soon as a trade happened with Tyreek Hill, this could be the best thing ever happened to the Chiefs, and the Chiefs will be a more complete team. They won't be as sexy. They won't score 40-50. They won't have that 80-yard bomb to Tyreek Hill or crossing pattern to go 65, but they're still going to be really good, and they're going to be fighting for the home field advantage, and they will win the division. It might be tough, but they'll win the division. And here we are, and people are like, well, we thought this division is not very good. Well, you're the ones that said it was great. You're the ones that built it up to be great. You actually got to see these people play. Just because Khalil Mack joins the Chargers doesn't mean they're the doomsday defense of the Dallas Cowboy days. Just because Russell Wilson joins the Denver Broncos doesn't make him John Elway II. Okay? And the Raiders getting Davante Adams, who didn't see that one coming? He's working with Derek Carr instead of Aaron Rodgers. And Adams has played actually fine this year. And by the way, the Raiders and the Broncos got new head coaches. So new systems that nobody seemed to acknowledge when they made all these bold predictions. Everybody wants to say the Chargers are the team. Every year we anoint them as the team to beat the Chiefs. And here we are on Sunday Night Football this Sunday, where they could be basically eliminated from winning division with seven games to play. Yeah. But please, please, let's go ahead and start it now. The Chargers are the favorite to win the AFC West in 2023. Let's just jump on the wagon, everyone. Come on. And you know what it is? It's people that are bored. It is talk show people. Yeah. It is people on ESPN and Fox that are bored out of their mind. They know the truth, and they lie through their teeth on national television trying to get you, everybody out here, riled up to think that they're sliding your team when they know damn good and well the Chiefs aren't finishing fourth in their division. It's only to get attention for their Twitter handle. It's like there was some gal I've never heard of that's on some show on TV for football. Said the Chiefs are going to finish last in the division. I'm like, you need to be fired, because that is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard anybody say when talking about football. I don't care if you're a woman or a man. One of the dumbest things. Why? I mean, if you tell me Mahomes is out for the season before the season begins, now I'll listen to you.
But they lost one player. It's not like Tyreek Hill was everything the Chiefs were about. They never were. The Chiefs won divisional titles with Alex Smith and no Tyreek Hill. They won division titles with Tyreek Hill and Alex Smith. They won 12 games without Patrick Mahomes. Andy Reid went to a Super Bowl, or excuse me, he went to at least an NFC title game with his leading receiver being Todd Pinkston with 550-some yards, and he still was able to make it to the NFC title game and host it. So it's amazing to me that people are so lazy, they can't do any kind of research. And in this day and age, all you got to do is Google it, and they come up with this trash and garbage they throw out there left and right, and then you don't see them eat their crow. Bart Scott was the same way. Oh, Chiefs aren't going to even make the playoffs. What are you basing that on? Did you even watch any film? Did you even study anybody the Chiefs drafted? Did you understand who the Chiefs lost or got rid of they don't want anymore? Did you take any of that into account? No, you didn't. Because you're just a guy that likes to blab on TV and get people to go, oh, hey, you hear what Bart Scott said? Who's Bart Scott? Oh, a guy who used to play in the league. Maybe he took too many hits to the head, because that seems really dumb to say. Yeah, but there are people that are like, oh, yeah, Bart Scott. Yeah, I think he's right. The Mahomes and Chiefs are overrated. What's Mahomes going to do without his security blanket? Oh, yeah, that's right. You don't know anything about Chiefs football. The security blanket all along has never been Hill. It's been Kelsey. Okay, I feel better.
That's the only thing that people were talking about in the offseason, and the only thing they based that off, those talking heads that you're talking about.
Yes.
The Chiefs don't have Tyreek Hill.
So their offense is dead.
That's the one thing
that's it.
That was the contention of why the Chiefs were going to make
it. They didn't study any of the guys
coming look at anything else with this team and say that that's why. No. And that's outlandish. It's just sensationalism, basically.
It's irresponsible journalism is what it is.
One guy. They don't have Tyreek, so they're just going to drop off.
It's not even journalism. It's just...
I was guilty of saying they wouldn't win the division, but I thought I had solid reasons. I didn't think the Cardinals, Colts, Buccaneers would all... and the Raiders would all kind of struggle the way they did, whether it's injuries or some other reason. I didn't see the defense being what they are now until... the last month of the season with the rookies in the backfield. And so I decided to take a little bit longer, but I guess I was wrong. So,
but good for you to say you were wrong, Jason.
Yeah.
You know, unlike
the I did have them winning the AFC. I just thought it would take a little bit longer.
Yeah. I'm okay with people saying, the Chiefs might not make the Super Bowl. The Chiefs may not win the division. I get that. But when you're saying the Chiefs are going to finish last in the division, that's one of the dumbest things anybody's ever said.
Yeah.
All right, the Eagles got the Commanders tonight. Commanders 4-5, the Eagles are 8-0, and they host that one tonight. I'm going to set you up for the really cool story of the National Football League season. Are you ready for this? I told my oldest this. Him and I have a wager. He said 3 weeks ago the Eagles have an easy path to 10-0, and I said, I'll bet you they don't get to 10-0. Well, they're 8-0, so I've got two more shots. I got Taylor Heinicke and the Commanders. I feel really great about that one, in Philly tonight. But you know what the next game is for the Eagles? They got to go to Indianapolis, and wouldn't this be an amazing story? Everybody talking about how egregious and horrible, the worst thing they've ever seen and ever, ever. Joe Thomas, you mentioned. Bill Cowher, it's despicable and disgusting, blah, blah, blah. Wouldn't it be something if Jeff Saturday and the Indianapolis Colts with a 39-year-old quarterback put back in, Saturday doesn't know what he's doing, and he ends up starting 2-0 as head coach of the Colts, and he's the first guy to beat the Eagles this year, and all these other coaches have tons of experience. And Jeff Saturday starts his career 2-0 and have as many wins as he did his final year in high school as a coach, and he's the first one to beat the Eagles. Wouldn't that be quite the story? I think it's setting up to where we might see that. Yeah.
And have Jeff Saturday in his first two games and have as many wins this year as one of those so-called guys that Bill Cowher's talking about that's gotten all, you know, that went in and did all the things, paid all the dues, and Josh McDaniels, who he just beat.
Yeah.
And is now probably not going to coach after this year because he's had all the chances and can't even make them matter when he's a head coach.
Absolutely. Man, oh, man. All right, sir, attention to college football. I have a lot to cover today. We know we always go long on Monday, so you know that. But if you love sports talk, it's all good. K-State making a pretty big statement over the weekend and blowing out Baylor, and I know I didn't see that one coming.
See what the Wildcats do. Throwing on second down. Howard, end zone, caught, touchdown, Ben Sinnott. What a night for the sophomore tight end.
K-State wins 31-3. Will Howard came on late in the first quarter for Adrian Martinez, who hurt his leg. He drives him right down the field, made a sensational throw for a touchdown. As you heard, Howard finishes 19-27, 196, three scores. Vaughn had 158 total yards. K-State defense held Baylor out of the end zone, obviously, forced two turnovers. K-State now 7-3, 5-2 in the Big 12. Baylor drops to 4-3, 6-4 overall. K-State with the win, now in pretty good position because TCU beat Texas. And so Texas falls to third in the standings behind K-State, and TCU's clinched a berth in the Big 12 title game. So now K-State, believe it or not, K-State needs to take care of business this week and be huge KU Jayhawk fans.
Yeah.
Because if they want to clinch this weekend, now they don't have to clinch it this weekend. K-State simply could win their next two games, and they got her done. All right. If K-State beats West Virginia in Morgantown, they beat KU in Manhattan, K-State will go in a rematch against TCU in Arlington at AT&T Stadium for the Big 12 championship and probably beat TCU and spoil everything for the entire conference. Okay? That's what it looks like it might happen. And, of course, KU, I already got a few KU fans going, wouldn't it be something to ruin K-State's season and be the ones that stop them for going and beat them in Manhattan? And I said, you know what? You could do that. It's possible. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm betting on K-State. Here's why. K-State has a better defense, really good defense. KU's defense isn't very good. That's it. That's the only reason. I think they both have good offenses, no matter who their quarterback is. I mean, honestly, KU and K-State probably have the best backup quarterback situations of anybody in this conference.
Yeah.
And I thought Texas and OU had all these recruits and five stars. So KU and K-State probably have the best backup quarterbacks in the league. They've both done fine when they've been out there and played. And so the offenses aren't the problem. K-State's got an outstanding running back in Deuce Vaughn, as we know. Devin Neal's tearing it up. More on him in a moment. And then you got the backup quarterbacks that played well. And maybe Jalen Daniels is back for that K-State game in Manhattan to end the regular season on November 26th. But here's the thing. K-State fans for this week, if you really want to make sure you get in the Big 12 title game and don't chance losing to KU at home, so because that would maybe be embarrassing to you, you don't want to take that shot, which I still think you win anyway. Well, here's what you do. You cheer for you beat West Virginia, and you cheer like heck for the Jayhawks to beat Texas. And then it don't matter if you lose to KU at the end.
Yeah.
You are still in the Big 12 title game. You've clinched a berth. So it's kind of weird. You're going to play them in 2 weeks, but now you probably should kind of cheer for them to beat Texas, which, honestly, anybody that plays Texas, you should cheer for the team that plays Texas.
Anyway. Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. I'm following the path with you.
Mm-hmm.
West Virginia and Kansas are two games you got to win if you're
yeah, you can't
in
rely
contention
on other people
for the Big 12 championship game. These two teams are teams you beat,
and you have two losses. You shouldn't go in. And nobody to me, you should get TCU the Big 12 title if everybody has three losses and they have one have zero.
None.
Just give TCU the Big 12 championship. But don't play this game. I know that ain't going
to
happen. Well,
that was my contention the whole time when they decided to add this second game. Is like, we've beaten everybody in this league already.
Yep.
Why do
we
have to
do
it
twice?
A second time?
And the other thing we had talked about before, too, is the extra data point. And we said that'll come back and haunt and it'll eventually cost the Big 12. And it did last year. And I think it's going to happen again this year. Because remember, K-State was beating TCU pretty good, and then all the injuries happened.
Right.
But TCU will be better prepared, I would think, for a rematch. But there's a long way to go. Let's first, you know, enjoy the win at K-State over Baylor. Chris Klieman really enjoyed it.
What a performance. What a win. We've done this a couple times where we don't know if we saw that one coming. I couldn't be more proud of the guys. We talked about it in the locker room after the Texas loss of rising up and having resolve, and there's so much still in front of us to play for. Great win because I know how hard it is to win here. We talked all week long. This game was going to be about possessions, about time of possession, about winning on third down, about getting off the field on third or fourth down on defense, and that's the type of game it was, and it was a complete team win.
Listen, I didn't see that one coming at all. I don't care if it's Adrian Martinez or Will Howard. To go into Waco and win 31-3, wow.
And Baylor's not like Oklahoma State was, like this completely ravaged with injuries. It was just that was a total
quarterback
domination.
Back.
Yeah, and they, yeah, I just don't. It's what we talked about, and Fitz talked to Klieman about it in the press conference earlier this week. It's like there's nothing that's a gimme in this conference, and it's a battle every time you go out there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a perfect example of the way K-State has looked over the last few weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like just dominant. Didn't look like they could be stopped against Oklahoma State. I know, again, they had injuries. And then they just lay an egg in an entire first half against Texas. Like mm-hmm. they're just, I don't know if they're just not focused. I don't know what, but it's like you got to come out and bring your A game every week in this conference because – I said on Friday, I think it was, like, top to bottom, this is one of the best years the Big 12 has ever had.
Totally agree.
It's so much parity because I said Friday, you don't have Kansas anymore.
No.
You
no
don't have the automatic win in the 10th spot anymore in this conference.
And you could argue there's not a dominant team like Oklahoma.
No, and I did say that, too. I was like, now, on the other side, there's not, this conference isn't out. It's like TCU's undefeated, but there's so many opportunities they've had to lose, and they've gotten breaks go their way.
Sure.
It's not the best conference that we've ever seen from the Big 12 since the 10-team league started, but it is the most parity that we've ever seen in this conference right now.
Most balanced,
yeah,
top to bottom. I agree with you totally.
We talk about that a lot in basketball, right? Because everybody was like, well, look at this. This is the most parity. It's the best conference. No, it's like who's good at the top.
Right.
That makes you the best conference more than it does if you have parity as far as the grand scheme of things.
But totally.
It's wild, and you don't expect a 31-3 win at Waco, but again, Baylor didn't come out probably as focused as maybe they should have at home against a team that just lost last week.
Which, how can you not be focused?
I know.
I don't understand that. And maybe
they were, and just things didn't go right for them.
I think that might have been it. But Martinez, it's reported, is going to be out possibly 4 to 6 weeks. There's reports coming out of Manhattan, whether not really confirmed yet, but there are some rumors out there. I think he's going to be out for at least a few weeks. So that means you're going to use up the year for Will Howard.
Yeah,
you still have two left, though, right? You have two after this year?
I think just one.
Just one, okay.
Yeah.
Kobe Savage looks like he's out for the season. Yeah. That's a big blow for the defense.
That hurts way more than Adrian being out.
Yep. Well, yeah, because Will Howard's playing so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Will Howard will probably be the quarterback the rest of the year, and K-State is in the driver's seat to make it to the Big 12 title game. And we on this show, we'll plot ourselves on it. Shoulder. We on this show said that K-State had a very, very good chance to make it to the Big 12 title game before the season began. And there are some people laughed at us.
Yeah.
I know a couple.
After a loss to Tulane in September, it didn't feel great. But
which, why should that matter? That was a non-conference loss.
It doesn't matter, yeah. But just the way the team looked in that game. And
sure. And turns
around right away in Norman.
They've had a couple of the best wins of the season in college football. And then they've had a couple of head scratchers. KU, how about Jared Casey from Plainview, Kansas, according to Ryan Leaf, the commentator?
In the pistol, they will call the play. Beans looking to throw. He's got a man. If he hits him in stride, he does. It's Casey at the 45, 35, 30, 25, 20, the 10, the 5. Touchdown, Kansas. Jared Casey down the left sideline, and the Jayhawks strike back with a 66-yard house call. Bean to Casey.
It's a perfect call. It's 4th and 1. And they sneak out the big, huge blocking tight end. And he rumbled, and I mean he rumbled, for the touchdown from Plainville, Kansas. I don't know if the announcing is just getting worse or what. Like, the K-State game, by the way, they had remote broadcasters. It's K-State and Baylor. They had guys that did the Oklahoma-West Virginia game were the same announcers that a few hours later did K-State and Baylor. And those announcers were not at either one of those games. The K-State game where Adrian Martinez got hurt at TCU, they didn't have a sideline reporter, did Fox. And this is a primetime big game. And so apparently it's all about saving money and getting less for your product. And then you've got announcers that don't know where play people are from. They don't know how to pronounce their names. And it's getting worse. And it really is an insult to our profession, I will tell you that.
Prep the right way if you're doing two games in one day in the Big 12 conference.
And you're not able to go talk to coaches,
have
the meetings they have during the week, be there on site. You can't get any idea what the atmosphere is like. There's so many other things you can see when you're there instead of going off of monitors clearly. If you really pay attention, you can see the difference.
It's hard for me. The one year when I had to do Boyd Sedgwick on a Friday night and then Sharon Springs St. John Sipton on Saturday just to prep for two games that we're going to.
But you were going to be there.
Different days. I was there.
Yeah.
But it's like you got to jam all that in. You got to shift and understand. Like 2 hours later, you're shifting from Oklahoma, West Virginia to K-State, Baylor. And like all the things that were on your mind for most of the day are not gone. Now you've got to change your attention to something completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, same conference, but completely different as far as the matchup.
I've done two football playoff games in a day twice in my life.
Yeah.
And you do. You have to prepare for obviously four teams. And I did a Lakeside Marmaton Valley game, and I had a Beloit-Phillipsburg game later that night. So I did two in one day. One time I did Baileyville B&B against Hope when they still had a school, and I had Centralia Colgan later that night.
I've probably done it a few times for the 8-man championships.
Right. And it's not that big a deal to me, but it is interesting how you got to sort the information in your head. But we're at least there. I can't imagine if you are going to sit at home, if I sit at home in Beloit or you sit at home here in Glen Elder calling the game,
from afar,
yeah,
not being there for both the games. That would make it way, way more difficult.
Yeah. And, yeah, and the level that you have to have for Big 12 football is just different, too, than what we're doing. But they get everything handed to them, too.
So they have all the information.
They've got all the information they need and still mess up. Can't wait for a return trip to Texas, Brent Musburger.
Oh, yes. That's good stuff. Texas Tech scored 17 straight after KC's touchdown that you heard. 24-7. Go on to win 43-28. KU cut it to 33-28. Then it was 36-28. And then a fumble by Jason Bean pretty much ended things. K-State, KU's kickers, I mean, he makes me nervous. He has his entire career every time he gets ready to kick. He missed two field goals. He's 16 of 31 in his career kicking field goals. That's not really good. Two turnovers in the game as well. And Devin Neal, listen, Devin Neal is KU's version of Deuce Vaughn. I'm not saying he's as good as Deuce Vaughn. I'm just saying he is.
Well, he can be.
He can be, yeah. I mean, right now, 24 carries, 190 yards. He's just a sophomore. KU actually outgained Texas Tech 525 to 510, but they were negative two in the turnover category. Lance Leipold on the loss in Lubbock.
All in all, I thought we handled the up-tempo of their offense and had some things decently. But at the end of the day, we have, you know, they executed better than we did. We had opportunities to make plays, and having people there, we didn't. We had opportunities to, you know, close gaps and make things happen. You know, we missed two field goals. They make their field goals. A lot of different things in this game that, you know, that we were outplayed.
This one was, I thought, one of the easiest games to predict on the docket this week. KU, super excited, bowl eligible, on a super high. We don't have to worry about losing seven straight. We lost three in a row. We're 5-3. We're off to Schneid. We're going bowling. And you go to Lubbock, and I expected them to lay a big fat egg. Now, they didn't lay a big fat egg, but they have a – this is not a tendency. It's a complete trend. Think about it. At West Virginia, at Houston, at Oklahoma – at Baylor and at where they just were, Texas Tech. They've been down by double digits early in every one of those games. Now, that's really, really difficult to win games on the road when you get down by two touchdowns every time you go on the road. Now, they came back against Houston and West Virginia and won. Okay, Oklahoma came back, made it down to 10 after being down by 21, made it interesting. Baylor, they were down, getting killed, 28-3, came back, got within 28-23, nearly stole that one. And here, they battled back after being down 24-7, and they get within 5. But it's just too big a hole to dig. KU's biggest problem on the road is their slow starts continue to come back and bite them, because that was a winnable game in Lubbock. And now they're 6-4.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, that's a winnable game. And if a kicker makes a few kicks, helps too. So KU 6-4, 3-4 in the Big 12. Texas Tech 5-5. West Virginia beat Oklahoma in Morgantown. First time ever West Virginia's beaten Oklahoma at home. First win for West Virginia over Oklahoma in the Big 12. 23-20 was the final. Oklahoma State beats Iowa State in Stillwater 20-14. The Huskers are headed for 3-9 again. Remember, every year, we're going to win 8 games. Nebraska fans are one of the most blindly loyal fan bases that I've ever seen.
I will give them credit for that, for being eternally optimistic.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I think every year they're in a Frost era. We're going to win 8 or 9 games.
Oh, 1 year.
Did you look at the schedule? Oh, those are winnable games. We're better Northwestern. We have a better roster. Yeah, but you actually got to go play the game. See, that's the thing.
1 year the schedule was supposedly so easy that it was going to be 10.
10?
Yes.
We're going to win 10 games.
And it was not 10.
No. Well, they're not winning 10 this year. Huskers are 3-7. They get drubbed by Michigan without their starting quarterback again, Casey Thompson. Huskers, 146 yards of offense, 8 first downs. That's it. They're 3-7, 2-5 in the Big Ten.
I fell asleep in the second half of this one. It was just, I mean, yeah, I've been guilty of dozing off during games before, but I just flat out napped during the second half.
You telling me that, like, I have this happen to me as I get older. I'm sitting, I'm watching the game, and I feel my eyes get heavy, and I fight it. And you're telling me in this case, this you were just like, just the heck with it. I'm not fighting it. Yeah. Just let me fall asleep and miss this.
Yep.
Well, you didn't miss much. Michigan now 10-0. Mickey Joseph, the interim head coach, give him the head coaching job.
I thought he was better, but it wasn't much room in there. You know, we wasn't getting much push off the line of scrimmage. So just telling the backs, once you get in, you see it, you got to go, because it's not going to stay open very long. The credit to Michigan.
They're just better than us.
All right, top 25. That's all I'm spending time on the Huskers. That's all they deserve. Georgia beats Mississippi State. They're number one in the land. Ohio State, number two, rolls Indiana. We mentioned Michigan's win. TCU gets by Texas. TCU dominated that game. Final score doesn't indicate how TCU dominated that game. I love how Texas people just keep jumping on that wagon, falling for it every single time. Tennessee rolls Missouri. Number 25, Washington beat number 6, Oregon. We talked about the carnage that could happen in the Pac-12. It already happened before this weekend's games. Mm-hmm. UCLA got knocked off by Arizona, and Oregon got knocked out by Washington. So now, of course, UCLA will probably beat USC, and then Oregon will beat Utah, and then everybody's canceled out. And then the SEC will get three teams in the college football playoff, or TCU will be in with one loss, possibly. We shall see. LSU beats Arkansas barely, 13-10, have a bit of a letdown. But thanks to Alabama's win over number 11 Ole Miss, 30-24, LSU's going to the SEC title game, where they'll face Georgia. Clemson beats Louisville. Utah rolled Stanford. Stanford used to be a good football team. They're just not very good right now. No. Penn State shut out Maryland. Penn State ranked 14th. Number 15, North Carolina, is the worst 9-1 team you'll ever see. They beat Wake Forest 36-34. Their defense is not good at all, but they won a lot of close games. Central Florida beat Tulane 38-31. We mentioned K-State. Notre Dame outlasted Navy 35-32. Number 21, Illinois, lost to Purdue 31-24. In the Big Ten West, four teams are tied at 4-3. See if I remember them. Purdue, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota, I believe, are all 4-3. And one of those will get the pleasure of playing Ohio State or Michigan in the Big Ten title game. Now, guys, let me ask you a question. This whole championship stuff, why do you... I guess I know why Ohio State and Michigan are the same division, because it guarantees they play each other once. But these division things, we see in Big 12, we just talked about earlier, TCU shouldn't have, if TCU wins out and everybody else in the conference has two losses, and TCU beat everybody, why does TCU have to win another game in a rematch against a team they already beat to win the Big 12 championship? Although, in fairness, why did Oklahoma have to do it against K-State back in 2003? Honestly. Right. Okay. Why does...
Well, they didn't play in the regular season in 2003.
True, but Oklahoma could argue, why are we losing? We have no losses.
Yeah.
And K-State has three. Yeah. Why do we have to beat a three-loss team in a Big 12 title game to win the conference championship?
Yeah, I get your point.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't round robin then. But, and then you got Ohio State and Michigan. One of those teams, like, this is the argument for both Ohio State and Michigan to be in the playoff. Is why should we be punished because our system's so screwy that a 4-3 in-conference team like Minnesota, Purdue, or Iowa, or Illinois plays the team we just barely lost to in the final week of the regular season, which I don't know if that Michigan-Ohio State game is in Columbus or Ann Arbor. I don't know. But whoever loses that game, as long as they're not blown out, whoever loses that game, the knock is like, well, you didn't win your division, and so how can we let you be in the playoff because you didn't even win your conference title? We're the Big Ten, and we're really, really good at football, and we have two clearly great teams, but because we're put in the same division so that we play each other every year from a rivalry perspective and to make networks lots of money, you're going to punish us, and you're going to allow Iowa to play in the Big Ten title game? No, no, no. There should be a rematch a week later between Ohio State and Michigan. Or none at all. Ohio State ran the table.
Yeah,
be done with it. It's just it's not good. It's not good for the Big Ten, and it's not good for the Big 12 either. Now, it's great for K-State or anybody else to get a shot, but it's not good for TCU. It's not good for Ohio State. It's not good for Michigan. And there have been years in the SEC as well, in fairness, where Alabama and LSU were awesome, and they're in the same side, or or Georgia some years, maybe with Auburn, and they're great, and then the other division isn't as good. It happens. Missouri one time went to the SEC title game with three or four losses, and there's no way they should have been in it, but they're in the right division. Is there any way to fix it?
Got to be careful that you don't overcorrect. I don't know.
If you split them into different divisions and then they don't make it the Big Ten title game, then you don't get Ohio State, Michigan to play at all.
Yeah, right. There's ways that you think you can fix it, but it's not worth it. I honestly don't believe it's worth it. Like, we saw it happen. We're talking about there's a possibility for three SEC teams in the 4-team playoff. Right? Mm-hmm. We saw it happen when Alabama and LSU played for a national championship.
Yes, we did.
When it was only two teams were allowed to play for the title.
Alabama did
and
not win their
so
division.
Oklahoma State, we were thinking, maybe should take the spot instead of whoever's getting in there to make it Alabama against LSU, right? And mm-hmm. so it's like, I don't I don't like that. I think it was actually LSU that didn't win their division that
year. It might
be. And so, because I think it was, like, I'm
they
arguing
had two losses.
LSU had their
that
chance.
Was a year,
yeah,
that was a year
Alabama
KU.
Beat LSU 9-6 in the regular season
right,
game.
That's right.
And, like, we don't, like, who wants to watch that for a second time? Yeah. Oklahoma, give Oklahoma State the chance to do it.
Yeah.
Because they won the Fiesta Bowl. They had one loss just like LSU did.
Yeah.
And, but,
yeah,
obviously the SEC. And so we see that. And so, that example there and the fact that you can still get in even if you lose the SEC championship game, we've seen it so many mm-hmm. times. If you're one of those teams at the top, I don't think it's even worth trying to fix. I don't think it's a thing that needs to be fixed for those teams.
But if the committee argues that they're putting more emphasis on winning your conference championship, which they have said that the last right. few years, and I actually am cool with that, but in these cases, I'm not.
But do they follow through on that?
Sometimes.
They say it.
It depends. The goalposts move every year.
I mean,
goalposts move every year.
If it's Alabama and Georgia both have a chance to be in the playoff, you're taking both of them.
Well, let me ask you this. I know we're long, but let me ask you this. If TCU loses the Big 12 title game, let's say TCU wins out and they go 12-1, and they lose in the Big 12 title game to Kansas State, let's say they lose by 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee runs the table, but they're not in the SEC title game. And they have one less win, and Tennessee's 11-1, and TCU's 12-1, and TCU made it to conference title game and then lost. And Tennessee, their only loss is the number one Georgia, but they didn't win the division. Mm-hmm. They didn't go to the conference title game. Who's in the playoff, TCU or Tennessee?
Tennessee.
You didn't even hesitate. Why?
Well, I would argue that that loss to Georgia is
they got rolled. They got smoked.
What was it, 14?
27-13.
I know it looked.
Game.
I know it looked yeah, worse I mean, it, than it, that. But,
in
but
the
if it's Oklahoma,
say it's be,
if it, let me ask you this. If yeah. it's Oklahoma or Texas, it's 12-1 and loses in the Big 12 title game to TCU, and Tennessee is 11-1, who goes to the playoff?
It's tougher there.
I don't think it is. I think Oklahoma or Texas is in.
I think Oklahoma would.
I think Texas
I feel
is
like,
too.
And
if Texas is 12-0,
yeah.
and they lose, they're 12-1,
yeah.
they lose to TCU by 10, and Tennessee didn't make the conference title game, Texas is in over Tennessee.
Yeah.
And that goes back to the old brand name thing. That,
absolutely.
That's
going to
kill. That's
yeah.
what's going to kill the Big 12. Is you talk about the parity, it's great to see new people at the top. It absolutely is. I agree with you totally. I love the fact that KU's better. There's no gimmies. I love the fact that it's not always OU at the top this year. However, TCU might very well have to go undefeated, and yet teams like LSU can lose twice and get in, and that's a bunch of crap.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, back to your how do you fix the divisions things. I don't know what you do. Like, do you at the beginning of each year try to predict who's going to be? Because that's not going to be real fair. Because someone's always going to say, you know, you're just going to go base this off last year, blah, blah, blah. We got this transfer quarterback. You don't know how these things are going to work out. Do you randomly draw divisions each year? I don't know what you do to try to fix them. You can't plan 4 or 5 years ahead on who's going to be good.
Here's what I'll tell you to do. Yeah. You don't have divisions.
The Pac-12 in theory
don't
is
have
fixing
divisions.
It right now because they don't have divisions
right.
anymore.
Don't
they've
have
got
divisions.
A lot. They've got enough teams to have divisions in the Pac-12.
Right. Don't have divisions.
Don't do
That's how you solve it.
Yeah.
You don't have divisions. Now you're going to say, well, the problem then is not everybody plays everybody. Well, guess what? Nobody plays everybody
yeah.
now anyway. And the SEC's getting bigger, adding two more schools to go to 16. All right. The Big Ten's getting bigger, adding UCLA and USC. You're getting to the point you're so big you can't play everybody, even if you do split into
You'll get into the situation where we're talking about what we talk about in pro sports, right? Like
right.
it's an off balance schedule,
yes.
but you can't. There's nothing you can do about
right.
it. If this team is better in their division that they do have and they play different schedule and have 100 wins instead of a team that has 92 wins that was playing a tougher schedule,
right.
it's you do what you do. I mean, and so either that's the NBA kind of changed their seating based on that because they understood that divisions don't mean everything, right?
Right.
And I think that I think the Pac-12 actually has the model right now if you want to try to fix it, is just
yeah.
to eliminate the divisions.
I'm with you. That's the way to fix it, I think. So that's top 25. Division 2 playoffs, Pittsburgh State. Gorillas. They play at 1 o'clock at home. They will take on the University of Indianapolis as Pitt State is undefeated. And so that'll be the first round. And Northwest Missouri State makes it to the playoffs again. They'll be on the road at 1 o'clock against, I can't pronounce the name, Wachita Baptist. I don't know how to pronounce that. So two MIAA teams have made the playoffs. in Division II. KU men's basketball team's 2-0. They'll play number 7 Duke tomorrow at 8:30 in Indy, Champions Classic. No Bill Self, no Curtis Townsend, as they're still suspended by the university. KU ranked 5th in the country. I don't see KU beating Duke tomorrow night, but we'll talk more about it tomorrow. K-State men, they win. Jerome Tang's team, they're so much more athletic and fun to watch. Whether they win or lose, they're fun to watch. They win 63-54 at Cal. 16 points, 9 rebounds from Keontae Johnson. Cats are 2-0. They'll be at home Thursday night against Kansas City. 5:30 is the tip time. They are the first of two games that night, as the women will play the nightcap at 8 o'clock. K-State women, I had the privilege of going to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and covering a basketball game on a baseball field, and it was a lot of fun. K-State women picked up their 1,000th win in program history. They beat Wisconsin 77-63 in what was called the Bruce City Battle in Milwaukee. K-State was down 13 in the first half, outscored Wisconsin 31-17 in the fourth for the win. Gabby Gregory, 25 points. Serena Sundell, another fantastic game. Took a horrible elbow to the face, but stayed in the game. 17 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. And K-State women will play number 4 Iowa Thursday night at 8 o'clock. So if you're a Cat fan, a Wildcat fan, and you love basketball, then you have to get there Thursday. You get to watch a very athletic and fun team to watch, the men, at 5:30 against Kansas City, and then stick around and watch one of the best players in all of America in women's basketball, Caitlin Clark. And we would have had two if Aoka Lee hadn't had knee surgery, but that'll be a great test for the K-State women. So you're going to see one of the best women's teams in all of basketball Thursday night at 8 o'clock playing K-State in Bramlage, and the K-State men at 5:30. That's a pretty good two-for-one situation there.
Absolutely.
Go watch it. If you can get there, get there. Wichita State suffered a tough home loss to Alcorn State, 66-57. Shockers outscored 38-26 second half. Former Jayhawk Joel Embiid in the NBA. Saturday night, 42 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 blocks. Sixers win. They're 6-7. Yesterday, the Sixers scored 27 points as a team in the fourth quarter, and Embiid scored 26 of the 27. Embiid was 7-8 from the floor, 12-15 from the line in the final 12 minutes, led the Sixers to a win over the Jazz, 105-98. Here, Embiid became the first player in NBA history. This is hard to believe, because I saw this number, and I thought, well, Chamberlain surely did it. Embiid became the first player in NBA history to have 50 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks, and 5 assists in a game. And I'm guessing Wilt probably didn't have the 5 assists.
Yeah, that's right. Probably what it was.
So, against Utah yesterday, Joel Embiid had 59 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists, 7 block shots in 37 minutes. So he sat a quarter of the game, resting. James Harden was brought in last year, and we immediately said it's going to be a train wreck because he's going to hog the ball, it's going to be his hand all the time, and then Embiid's not going to be as important as he needs to be. He needs to have the ball in his hands. Well, what do you know? Harden's hurt now. Sixers starting to win now, and Embiid has the ball more often, and he's dominating. That's why the Harden move to the Sixers made no sense to me. Unless Harden was going to share the ball more and move the ball instead of dribble it 18,000 times every possession, you're taking the ball out of the hands of one of the best players in the league who was runner-up to MVP, and I think at some point, if he stays healthy, will win MVP. Look what he is doing by being the man. Harden should never be the man anymore for the rest of his career. He should be the accomplice, the partner in crime. Embiid is the man. And with Harden out for over a month with an injury, Embiid is proving, once again, he's the man. And he was the man before Harden came to Philadelphia. And I love seeing Embiid do what he did last night. Holy cow, 59 points. That's insane, dude. That's insane. Yeah. Insane. And less than 24 hours earlier, he scored 42. Yeah, so he scored 99 points in 27 hours. And everybody knows he's the focal point.
Yeah,
he still did it.
Yeah, he's, listen, when he's zoned in and at his best.
Oh, goodness.
He is almost impossible to defend, like everything that he can do.
I think he might be the scariest guy to defend in the NBA when he's focused on sitting on
and
the three-point line.
That's the issue, is like Joel loses his mind sometimes, right? Like
if he makes a three early, he shoots too many threes, bro.
Yeah, like he just like decides, oh, this isn't, I'm not going to be this tonight. I'm going to be this instead.
My body's a little banged up. I'm going to play guard.
Right.
And he'll do fine. He'll score 30. Yeah.
He'll be stretch four tonight.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 7-foot stretch four. Yeah.
Even when he's not at his best, he's still like unbelievable. But when he just has everything working, I wouldn't want to be the guy.
I don't know how you guard him. And then he goes to the line. You foul him. He goes to the line. He's a good foul shooter too. Yeah, pretty good stuff.
When he decides he wants the 18 footer instead of the 23 footer, that's tough because he can knock down. I mean, he can knock down the three.
Yeah.
But he can definitely knock down that 18 footer. And then if you take that step closer, he's going to go. He can blow by you. He back you down. It's not.
Like I said, when Joel wants to shoot threes, be happy and just sit back and watch him shoot. And if he makes them, so be it. But, man, what a performance yesterday for Joel Embiid, the former Jayhawk for the Sixers against the Jazz. 59. That's a season high in the NBA. By the way, the Cavs, Winston Garland had 51 and 10 threes, and they lost. The Cavs did. Donovan Mitchell rested. And the other night, the Thunder beat the Knicks 145-135. It's good to know that the old NBA days are back where nobody plays defense. Woo! Fun stuff.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.